We opened a subject last week and are going to be doing kind of a part two of that this week. They're standalone lessons, but they have a tie together as well. As we've been talking about this year, who is my neighbor and whose neighbor am I, and how important it is that we think in terms of those people around us and the lost souls in the world, and doing what we can to help others to be able to see Jesus Christ. The lesson is entitled, The Heart of Jesus. And we want to talk about, if we're going to live like Jesus lived, if we're going to truly show to the world who he was, then we need to understand what his heart was, where he was focused, what it was that drove his life while he was here on this earth. Because the same things that drove his life ought to drive ours if we're going to reach out the way he would have us to do. And we looked at the verse in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 8 from the Beatitudes that says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And we identified Jesus had a pure heart. And that means a lot more than just that he didn't have sin in his life. It means a lot more than just what we might think of typically today when you mention pure in regards to light. We gravitate toward those things that are sexual or sensual, those things that are of the flesh. But it was much more than just that area of life. We said that word pure carries the idea of absolute single focus. It has been purified. It's like pure gold. There is nothing in it that alters it or adulterates it at all. The idea of a pure life or a pure heart is one that has a single focus, a single direction in life. And you can normally tell that by somebody's life if you look at it. If we think in terms of what drives people today, and what do they do because of that? Because that's going to dictate a lot, is it not? As we think about what drives them. And so we said with Jesus, first he had pure sight and pure feelings. You remember we looked at verses that said, because there are multiple ones, that he saw the multitudes. He was always aware of the things that were going around him. He noticed that. When people were hurting, Jesus noticed that they were hurting. When people were lost, he noticed that they were lost. He saw people because he was looking at people. And we, matter of fact, I'd ask you to open up to John chapter 5 in just a minute. We're going to look at that passage where we're going to see that he notices because he's there. He's in the midst of those people that are hurting, and that's why he sees those people that are hurting. And he's in the midst of them because he intentionally goes to be in the midst of them. He's different than a lot of the other people around him. But he also had pure feelings. It says, when he saw them, he felt compassion for them. It touched the heart of Jesus. And we understand that concept. If you've ever had anybody in your life that is close to you, that has come down with a significant illness. When the doctor gives that diagnosis that nobody wants to hear and comes out and uses that word cancer, that ugly word, that we think, you know, that's life-changing. And when it's somebody that's very close to us, we may feel sorry for anybody that is stricken. We understand that. But when it is somebody that is an intimate part of your life, we understand the concept of truly feeling what they feel. We hurt because they hurt. You ever been in that position? We haven't asked in a while. Just remember the drill? Nod one way or the other. I can read either direction. I just can't read when you don't do anything. Yeah, we have felt for other people. I mean, genuinely hurt because somebody else hurt. And that's what it says about Jesus. There was an empathy in Jesus. He had pure feelings. There was a compassion. It went beyond pity. It wasn't just feeling sorry for them. He thought in terms of compassion. What can I do to help alleviate the pain or the suffering that they are in? That was the nature of the compassion that he felt. So he had pure sight, saw them. And when he saw them, he had pure feelings. He felt compassion for them. So what does he want from us? That's kind of where we left off last time. We actually looked at this particular verse. But this brought us back, we said, full circle to our theme. That whole parable of the Good Samaritan, when we think in terms of who is your neighbor, Or who was neighbor to the one that fell among the robbers? That was the question Jesus asked in regards to that. And we read in chapter 10 of Luke, in that parable, says the Samaritan, the description of him, the Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, talking about the man who had fallen among the thieves, the robbers, the man who had been beaten and left for dead. And when he saw him, he had compassion. I mean, isn't that exactly the thing that it says about Jesus? This picture of the Samaritan, and I think that's an interesting part of that parable as well. We don't always think about it that way. But there's a part in which every one of us is represented by the man who's laying on the side of the road when Jesus came into our lives. We couldn't do anything. We were beaten. We were left for dead, or actually we were dead in our sins. He saw us, felt compassion. That's exactly what this man did. Jesus wants us to see and to have compassion for those who need that. But then also, you look at Mark chapter 5 that we looked at. You remember it talked about him healing that man that had been possessed with demons? Jesus went, and this guy comes out, and he's possessed with these demons, and they cast the demons into the swine. And this man is elated. He wants to follow Jesus. Jesus gets in the boat in order to leave, and he says, "Let me go with you." And Jesus says, "No, you can't come with us." Why? Because he needed him to do something else. And so he said, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." Is that not our life directive? Tell people what the Lord has done for you. I mean, if he's done something for us, isn't that what he's asking? He says, "I'm just asking you, tell others what I've done for you. Tell others how I have had mercy on you." And that is that directive. So we think in terms of reaching out, we think of our neighbor and how we're going to be neighbors to others. He says, just tell the people in your life. Find a way to share with others what God has done for you. I've mentioned numerous times here that it is because of seeing another family and how Christ was in their life and what God had done for them that caused me to come to the Lord. Should that not be what I want to portray to others? Shouldn't I want to cause people to say, "Why are you the way you are? Why do you feel the way you do? Why do you react the way you do?" Well, let me tell you what the Lord has done for me. You remember being told, "Be ready to give an answer," you know, because I think that's because we should live a life that causes questions. In the day and age of abortion and all the talk, and we talked about that a few weeks ago, I used to have a pair of feet. It looked like, remember Hang 10? Those of us that are old enough remember the brand Hang 10. Had a couple little feet on it. It was actually a surfer brand kind of thing. But I had a pair of feet. They weren't Hang 10 feet, but it was like a tie clip or a lapel pin. You know, you could put it on. And it was just a tiny little pair of feet, and that was worn for a purpose because they were a replica of the feet of a 10-week-old embryo in a mother's womb. And so people, occasionally when you wear something like that, people would say, "Hey, what are the feet?" You say, "I'm glad you asked. Let me tell you what the feet are for." And you could at least have a conversation about that. Well, our lives ought to be that way. Stimulating questions so that we can respond. Living in such a way, talking about kinds of things that stimulate questions. Saying the kind of things that cause people to think, wonder why he's constantly talking the way that he is. So pure feelings and pure sight lead to pure actions. What we're going to find out about Jesus is that he did something about it. So he left that area, and many people followed him, and he healed all the sick among them. Compassion, now we don't have the ability to heal the sick the way Jesus did. I understand that. He was performing miracles. But the key is, he did what he could do for them. I can't do what he did, but I can do what I can do. And that's what he's expecting me to do. Remember the old slogan? I don't know if the Army still even uses it. They used to. Be all that you can be was the idea. You be all you can be. We can't ask you to be somebody else, but we want you to be absolutely all you can be. That's exactly what God asks of us as well. Be all you can be. It says also in Luke chapter 6, everyone tried to touch him because healing power went out from him, and he healed everyone. Now, he went on later to talk about, that's not the goal, and we'll see that in a moment. It wasn't a goal just to heal people of sickness. That was always going to be here. Man has brought sin into the world and corrupted the world, and so therefore there is sickness there and there is death. That didn't exist prior to man sinning. There was no sickness, there was no death. Adam and Eve had access to the tree of life. There would have been no death, but there was once they sinned and partook of the tree that God told them not to partake of. And so since that time, there's sickness and death. That's not going to leave until the world ends. But there was a purpose in the things that he did. And I think he wants us to see that as well. So as we think about the pure actions, understand because of what he saw and felt, he did what he did. That was an automatic next step. We understand that concept. There are things that we do for our children all the time growing up because of what we see and what we feel, whatever the circumstance may be. Sometimes it may be that we see something we don't like and we feel disturbed or aggravated or concerned about that, and so it may be in the realm of discipline. Or your child falls and skins up his knee or her knee, and we see that, and we feel because we understand what that pain is like, and so we get out something to comfort them and do what we can. The idea is the things that we truly feel because of what we see in our life will determine what we do. He says, you see, you feel, it's going to lead you to do something. We understand that. We see things sometimes and have the wrong feelings and therefore don't do what we should do. You ever been there? We react either way. It doesn't matter whether it's positive or negative. It's still the same repeated driving force. We see something, we feel something, we do something based on what it is that we feel. And so heart determines action. The proverb says, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. He says right here, what you feel, what's inside, that's going to determine what you do. What drives you the most? How am I going to act? So somebody that wants to climb the corporate ladder, that's the drive of their life. In their heart, they want to be at the top of the corporate ladder. They're going to act in certain ways, are they not? If that's the drive of their life, they may dress a certain way. I mean, there are power colors. Most of us don't care. But there are colors that they may wear because they're power colors. They represent certain things. They're going to dress a certain way. They're going to go to the certain places. They're going to hang out with certain people because they're trying to climb the corporate ladder. People that want to do things like, maybe people want to be a model. And so what are they going to do? They're probably going to find themselves going to somewhere like New York. People that want to be a movie star are going to find themselves going to somewhere like Hollywood. You go because of the drive of your life. We understand that. Where did Jesus go? Look back at John chapter 5 with me again. Because I think this is such an incredible passage. We opened this up last time and looked at it, and I just want us to look at this again and look at the part that we didn't look at last week. But I like the beginning because, again, for me, it helps when God's word is visual and I try my best to get a picture of it. This passage is incredibly visual. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem, and there was in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. And I asked you, just get a picture of that. You got five gazebos around this thing in our way of thinking about it. Five porches where you can house these people, where people can come in and gather and be in a common gathering place. And in these... So these aren't the kind of porches you think, hey, that's the party I want to go join. You know, look at that group of people. They look like they're having fun. Let me go over and talk. You ever been in one of those things? It's like, man, I'd like to go over there. It says, in these lay a great multitude of sick people, blind and lame and paralyzed. So that porches full of people that are blind, lame, paralyzed, sick people. That's what's laying there. Well, it's not the kind of place that attracts a lot of people who aren't blind, lame, and paralyzed, the people who aren't sick. But They lay there because it says that for an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water, and whoever stepped in first after the stirring of the water was made well of whatever disease he had had. So we understand that. Where would you be? Do you ever think about it? Where would you be if you were one of those blind or lame or paralyzed people? You'd be there by that pool. You're thinking, I want to be first one in the water. So they are. They're all crowded around this place. They want to be first in the water. And it says there was a man who had been in the situation he was in, this infirmity. A certain man was there who had an infirmity for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been in that condition for a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" I want us to look at three actions at the sheep gate for Jesus, at the pool of Bethesda. Things that because Jesus saw what he saw and felt what he felt, three things that we see about his actions that I think are helpful for us. We mentioned last week that he was even there. I can just assure you, this is not the kind of place where the religious leaders of the day were spending their time. That's not who was there, but Jesus was there. He placed himself in the midst of hurting people because he was trying to help hurting people. And what we see from him here is not only did he place himself in their midst, he desired to help those who could not help themselves. Jesus says, "Do you want to be made well?" And what is this man's response? The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred. But while I'm coming, another steps down before me." Wow. I mean, I'm just stop and think of that passage, that statement. This man's been in the condition he's in for 38 years. How badly would you want to be healed if you'd been in that condition for 38 years? How much would you want that? I've had a cough for about 3.5 weeks, still lingering on. I want it to go. I want it to go. It's an annoyance. It's an annoyance to me. It's an annoyance to people who will remain unnamed who are trying to sleep. When I'm hacking and coughing. But I've had it for about 3.5 weeks. It's an annoyance, and I do want it to go. I can't even imagine if I had it for 38 years, how tired would I be of having it? This man had had this infirmity for 38 years. And he said, "I want to get down in that water so badly, but every time it gets stirred up and I want to get down there and I start to make a move, boom, somebody is in front of me and they get into the water and I miss my chance again." And I'm telling you, that's a sad statement. This man's hurting. He wants to be in that water and he can't do anything about it. It isn't that he doesn't want to get in. He wants to get in. He doesn't want to be in the condition he's in. Now, I understand. There are people in the world that are in a condition away from God and are satisfied and happy being in a condition away from God. There are some who are directly opposed to God himself and don't mind letting you know that and fighting about that. But we need to understand there are a lot of people in the world who are in a condition of being away from God and would like to be out of that condition. They don't even know how to do so. They can't help themselves. And that's what the sick man said. And so Jesus said, "Rise, take up your bed and walk. You can't help yourself, I'll help you." Is that not the condition of every single person who is in sin? You can't help yourself. Before I came to Christ, I was in that condition for a long time, but there was nothing that Mark could do for Mark. It wasn't until Mark allowed Christ to do for him that anything could happen. He says, that's who it is. That's why we're taking Christ to the world, because they can't get out of their situation by themselves. He was willing and desired to help those who could not help themselves. But then secondly, it says immediately the man was made well and took up his bed and walked, and that day was the Sabbath. And so the Jews are going to question him. We'll get to that in a minute. But here's what I want you to understand. Jesus places few restrictions on those he ministers to. Now, it's interesting because as a church, and we've talked about this, and we'll continue to look at some more lessons as the year goes on. There are things that God expects us to do as a church and things he expects us to do with that money we collected today. God gives us some specifics as things he wants us to do with the treasury that is gathered. But in Galatians, as Paul was writing, Paul said to the individuals there, he said, do good unto all men. Jesus didn't put a lot of restrictions on this man. He didn't even ask him, you know what, if I heal you, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with the healing that I give to you? I mean, it would seem like a fair question, wouldn't it? But Jesus didn't say that. Jesus just wanted to know, do you want to be made well? Do you want to be made well? I'm not saying he doesn't put restrictions on us when we come to him. He does. We have lives that he expects us to live. We didn't get to it today in James, but that's exactly where James chapter 1 is going to go. He's going to put in that gigantic word there, therefore. Because of the things he's just said, therefore, he's going to say, here's how you ought to live. That's the nature of coming to Christ. But who are we reaching out to? What kind of restrictions are we going to put on the people we're reaching out to? Jesus reached out because they were hurting. That was all he needed to know. Do you want to be made well? That's what he wanted to know. Man said, I do, but I can't do anything about it. Jesus said, I can. Take up your bed and walk. Now, it didn't set real well because he took up his bed and walked. And as we've mentioned before, now as he's walking and he goes away from there, because I'm just feeling like the Pharisees weren't hanging right there at the pool with all the sick people. That's just my guess. But he bumps into some of them, doesn't he? And he's carrying his bed. Now they see a lame man carrying his bed. And instead of rejoicing and saying, wow, you can walk? How did that happen? They said, hey, do you not understand it's the Sabbath? You can't carry your bed on the Sabbath. That's against the law. They said, who did this to you? He goes, you get a picture of him looking around because it's like Jesus had left the area, it says, because there was such a great multitude. And I just get a picture of this guy who's going, I'd tell you, but I don't know where he went. Because he's going to tell him later. It's not that he's refusing to tell him. He's going to tell him later, but Jesus wasn't concerned about that. If I heal you, it's the Sabbath. If I heal you, you're going to rat me out? I'm not healing you if you're going to rat me out. Well, we're going to read in a few minutes. He ratted him out. When he figured out it was Jesus, he went and told him, hey, it was Jesus that did this. That wasn't the concern to Jesus. We can't be concerned with how everybody's going to respond. We need to minister to people. We need to take the Lord to people. Some may do the right thing with that, some may not. But Jesus wasn't interested in putting heavy restrictions on the person before he did the good deed. Paul says, do good unto all men, especially those, he says, of the household of faith. But do good unto all men. That's what we're about. Why? Because we should have the heart of Jesus. And Jesus did good to all. Those that appreciated it, those that did not. Not everybody Jesus did good for appreciated it. Not everybody Jesus did good for followed him because he felt he did. And that's what he's asking us to do. So the one who was healed, it says in verse 13, because they asked him, they said, why are you carrying your bed? He says, the guy that healed me told me to. That's what he says. The guy that healed me said, take up your bed and walk. So what am I doing? I took up my bed and I'm walking. They said to him, who is the man who said that? Who said to you, take up your bed and walk? But the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn a multitude being in that place. But then Jesus helps us to understand something else as well. Don't think that he is only about helping people physically. He didn't put the restrictions on this man before he healed him. But you know what you're going to find out is he uses opportunities of ministering to people's physical needs in order to earn the opportunity to minister to their spiritual needs. Because Jesus is going to see him again. And what does Jesus say? Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest something worse come upon you. And that's when the man departed and told the Jews that Jesus was the one who had made him well. You're not just asked by God to help people physically. It isn't the job of all of us to only reach out to people and take care of the world's physical maladies. But he says you can have compassion on the world so that you can show them Jesus Christ. That's the goal. That's the point. Jesus healed this man and then said, now, what should you do with that information? What should you do with that healing? Like he told the man healed from the demons. Go and tell your friends. This needs to change your life. When we're reaching out to the people of the world and helping the world with whatever it is that we can do for them, it ought to be for a purpose of helping them understand that that is Christ-driven and Christ should change their lives. That's the goal in all of that, and that's what Jesus did. And so we're back at Matthew chapter 5 and verse 8, where it says, blessed are the pure in heart, for what? They shall see God. That's an interesting statement. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. John 1:18 says, no man has seen God at any time. But, says the Son declared him. Jesus declared him or explained him. You remember Jesus saying things like, if you've seen me, you have seen the Father. You want to see God? Look at my life. That was the nature of that. Nobody had ever seen God. But they saw Jesus. And Jesus is saying, now you can see. Do you know what God's like? We use the word that way, do we not? It doesn't always mean to see with the eye. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Well, someday, we understand that, but I don't think that's what he's talking about. Someday, we'll be in the presence of God. But I think this beatitude carries more idea than that. Those that are pure in heart, we say things like, you know, we try to explain something to somebody, and what might you ask them when you're done? Now do you see? Well, we're not asking them, do they see? We're asking them, do they understand? Do you perceive? You know what? Now I can see it clearly, even though you're not seeing anything clearly. You perceive something. And I think that's the nature of even what he's saying, because he's saying, when your heart is single, when your heart is focused, when your drive in life is to please God and to live for God like Jesus's was, he was pure in heart, and that's why repeatedly he said, I'm not here to do what I want, I'm here to do what my Father wants. That's the only thing that mattered to him. Because there were choices he could have made that could have helped him physically, weren't there? You remember the disciples saying to him, you can't go to Jerusalem. They're going to kill you. And he said, that's the very reason I came, because that's what the Father wanted me to do. Absolute single focus. He says, when we have the focus of God, then we'll see, we'll understand, we'll perceive differently. You might think of it in these terms. The closer you are to him, the more sensitive your discernment becomes. And so as I draw closer and closer to God, and as I have God's focus in life, then I see things much better. His goals for me. His mission for me. The pain that others are feeling. The closer I am to God, the more I understand others who are hurting. All of that. He says, you'll see God. You get a better picture even of who your God is. That's why Jesus was saying, just look at me. You want to see God? Look at my life. That's what I'd like others to be able to do. Wouldn't we love to be able to give that as a testimony? You want to see God? Look at my life. Well, we fall short of that. We understand, but that's the drive. And he's saying, when our focus is absolutely pure, our sight is pure, our heart and feelings are pure, we'll have a clear perception of our God, because our goals will be his goals. Our drive, our mission will be his drive and his mission. That's what we strive for. And if we're going to reach out, we need to see God if we're going to show God. Pure hearts so I can see him, so I can show him to the world. If you're not a Christian, there is nothing more important than coming to God, giving your life to God. God says you can start a brand new life. He looked at this gentleman who had been infirm for 38 years and he says, go and sin no more. You can start a brand new life now. That's the nature of what Paul says in Romans chapter 6. He says, because when we're baptized into Christ, we are born again. That's the literal born again. Buried, the dead one, raised in newness of life as we've clothed ourselves with Christ. If you've never done that, take care of that today. Whatever you do, don't just walk away from it and not consider it, because it's that important of a decision. If we can help you understand the other things that he says, why you need to do that because you've not studied that, ask us. We'd love to show that to you. For those of us that are Christians, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. May we strive to have the purity of sight and feelings and actions that our Lord Jesus the Christ had when he was here on this earth. If we can help you respond to God's call, let us know while we stand, while we sing.